I'm very interested in the relationship between behavioral and biological outcome measures, and this example is coming from HIV, but it's a problem that I think going across the fields. And for those who came to listen to the Bashish Ghosh yesterday, talking the Spiegelman awardee, he talked about measurements, and that's falling into what he was talking about. So some outline, I have no financial disclosure. It's a joint work with several people at UConn. Tanya and Michael are here, and others, and Mike Carey at Brown. And it was partially supported by NIH, but NIH has nothing to do with the money. So HIV infections and people living with HIV is a public health concern. We have an estimate of 2.5 million new infections occurring every year, and around 34 million people living with HIV. There have been a lot of work and attention given to HIV in the last probably 20 years. And still, medical care costs in the U.S. From time of infection until time of death is around 500,000. And the average lifespan is around 24 years. So there is a lot of prevention work that being done on HIV. And in order to do that, we need to be able to effectively evaluate the efficacy of those interventions. And in order to do it, most of the people would argue that one needs to do with biological outcome. So sexual risk behavior can be measured using some biological assays, or we can use some type of behavioral measurement using a self-report. And we really want an accurate assessment of the sexual risk behavior in order to make correct evaluation of STI, sexually transmitted behavioral intervention, which HIV falls within this category. And when I just, so I'm a statistician and I went into this HIV world, and I would talk to the mostly psychologists and people that I work with, they say, well, you know, we don't really believe self-report. But you still ask them every time. So I said, if you don't believe them, why do you ask them? Say, well, we really have to ask them, but we really don't believe them. I said, that doesn't really make sense to me. Well, if you don't believe it, don't ask them. And if you if you believe them, then it's you can do great. So they still collect them, and that came, this project came about. Say, well, are there agreements between those two, and is there anything? Hopefully, from that we can look forward and see are some stuff that can be done in order to say when we can believe self-report and when we cannot, or if we don't believe it anyway, then just eliminate it.
So I have a point of information question.
Yeah.
How do you use a laboratory assay to assess sexually risky behavior?
Well, so that will go into the measurement. So we'll look on either STI or HIV, which the way to get that would be using sexual behavior. So the idea is that the intervention would be to reduce sex behavior. And you can measure it by asking the person how much intercourse you had in the last 30 days, or you can take a blood test, and if they got infected, it most probably happened because they had intercourse. So there is the issue of measurement, what we are measuring it, what we are trying to say, but so the main goal of this work is to compare the biological test to self-report, to measure efficacy of HIV behavioral intervention, to increase condom use and to reduce STI, including HIV. So the main idea that we are looking on behavioral interventions. So the interventions are behavioral ones. And as I said, although we are looking on HIV and STI, the result of this investigation could be applied in many other scenarios, smoking, adherence, alcohol, where there are many others where we are interested in the comparison of self-report compared to biological outcome. So, in order to extract the data, we looked on effect size from two comprehensive published meta-analyses, and that was supplemented by additional diffusion of effective behavioral intervention. If you have any question about how the data was extracted, send you to the meta-analysis expert, which is here, so you're lucky. Studies were included if they examined behavioral intervention focusing on reducing HIV risk. They used randomized controlled trial or quasi-experimental design with comparison condition, measure condom use and any type of STI, including HIV, and provide sufficient information to calculate effect size. So everyone would think that the last one would be obvious, but it not always is. The studies were retrieved from electronic database using reference section for two meta-analyses and some data from the CDC. So using that procedure, there were 57 studies, and within those studies there are 276 separate effect sizes that were included. So a study could have different effect sizes asking different questions. Independent raters calculated the effect size and coded study information about sample characteristic, ethnicity, gender, age, substance usage, etc. Design characteristic, like how the patients were recruited, number of follow-ups, content of control and intervention condition, and etc. We look on inter-rater reliability for the categorical variables was calculated using Cohen-Kappa, and the mean was 0.8, and the mean agreement was 93%, which showed very high reliability between the raters, and any disagreements between the coders then were resolved through a discussion with a third expert. So the effect size estimate for condom use and STI including HIV were calculated. The effect size was defined as the mean difference between the treatment and control divided by the pooled standard deviation. Tanya gave you the exact definition earlier. If the study reported the frequencies, we calculated the odds ratio and then transfer it to the D using Cox transformation. And when calculating the effect sizes, we adjusted for baseline differences between the condition and corrected for sample sizes. Now this made me crazy for a long, long time. So positive effect size indicate that the treated participant increased condom use and the STI or HIV went down. So the direction is opposite, so we have to remember that when we look on the results and the plots in a few minutes. So there are many ways to look on agreement between tests. We are going to look on a few, and hopefully some of the plots would help kind of give an idea about what we found. So the first table represents a weighted mean effect size at the last follow-up. So if there are several follow-ups, we look at the last time compared to the beginning. So if we look on the first row, we have the outcome was condom use. We have 108 intervention, and the weighted mean is around 0.2, which is significant. If we look on the right column we have the I square, which is the homogeneity of the effect size. And when Tanya looked on hers, in her example, she found 73%, and you said that that's very high. If you look here, you see that the effects, it's very heterogeneous. So the percent are close to 90 in most of the scenarios. So that means that all those studies are very, very different between one to another. The next three lines are still looking on condom use outcome, but now we are looking more specifically. The second line is with the casual partner, and we have 38 like those. And the third line is with a steady partner, and we have 23. And we see that both of those are very small number, close to zero, and non-significantly different than zero. And then we have around 82, which are unspecified. If you try to calculate and sum them up, they are not summing to the total, but that's because some would have more than one. So, I know they are not adding up. The last three lines looking about the biological outcome, so now we are saying, okay, the outcome is either HIV or STD negative. Again, we see when we look at that, we have 104 studies, we have a positive effect size. And when we look on only HIV and only STD, we see that only HIV negative, we have a negative sign over there, but it's not different than zero, and it's very close to zero. And the STD, which is the vast majority of those studies testing STDs, are much closer to the two groups together.
So let me understand how you did. You recoded things so that if the intervention was effective, it would be positive.
Positive. Yes.
Okay. So that's why you have written negative in the last three rows.
Yep.
And to make all those numbers in the middle column comparable.
Yes.
Where plus is good and minus is bad.
Exactly.
Thank you.
So we want plus. Well, we don't want plus. The investigator who gets money from NIH wants plus. But yeah. So that's that's the table I was thinking about when I started this project. I said, well, we can say biological outcome works or doesn't work. The self-report says work or doesn't work. And then look at that and see how much agreement. So if we look on the... So what we want most of the data to be on the diagonal. In essence, that's what we want. So if we look on the diagonal, we have like 83 studies, you divide by 127, so there are 65% agreement, if agreement is what you're interested. The other way is to look on sensitivity and specificity of the self-report comparing to the biological outcome, and we do that, we are making a very strong assumption that the biological outcome is measured without any error, which we know that that's not always the case, but we are willing to make it in here. So,
a person could have risky behaviors and not acquire an infection, right? I mean,
yeah.
And it could be measured perfectly without error, but the body has not told you that there was risky behavior.
Correct. Right. Yeah. So what I'm saying, there are measurement errors on both sides.
Right.
But we assume when we are looking on sensitivity, in essence, we are comparing it to a reference, and we assume that it's measured with normal, which is flawed, and that was going to be the next step. But now that's what we are doing. So I'll go into this 73% sensitivity and 34-35% specificity in a second. So we can take that table and break it into smaller categories. And we can look on the type of partner. So if we're looking on the line on the bottom, that is the general representation, and that's where the 73 and sensitivity, and 34% specificity, which we know that if anything is under 50, it's really bad. We can look also on B, which is the relationship between the effect size, and I'll show you a picture of that in a minute or so. If we look on the casual partner, we see that the sensitivity is around 90%, and specificity for HAV is around 23, and for SD is around 10. We can see also that the p-values are non-significant, and we have very small sample sizes. The only significant result which you should take in great assault is this steady partner, who, and the measurement is STD, but the problem is that we have only 7 in that group, so it doesn't give us much. The p-value is for this beta, which I'm going to show you what they are. So we can take all those studies and put them on a plot, where on the x-axis is the standardized mean difference for the biological outcome, and on the y-axis is the self-report behavioral outcome. And again, we would want everything to be on the upper right and lower left quadrant. That would mean that they have agreement. We see that the vast majority of studies are here. Again, the circle size is relative to the sample size in that study. Okay, so bigger the circle means that the study is larger. So if you are here, it's a true positive. If you are here, it's a true negative, false positive, and false negative. And in essence, it's kind of hard to see, but there is a line here that takes all those effect sizes and look on the relationship between the biological and the behavioral. And this line here, which is very close to zero, means that there isn't much relationship sizes, and look on the relationship between the is this 0.0.1. Okay, so there are some points here and here, but the problems are those which are here and here. So we can take that, and that is for the whole sample, and then we can break it down even more and look, okay, can we look on the relationship between condom use and protected sex effect size with a casual partner? So on A, we have the STD effects, and B, we have the HAV effect sizes. And again, the line that we see here are those betas from the table before. So here we see, in essence, a reduction, which the sample size, as we showed, is very small, but that's the only significant result that we found. Here we see that it's pretty much zero. There isn't really a relationship between the biological and the self-report. And we have similar thing with plots for the steady partners. So self-report and biological outcome are two different measures for same phenomenon. In HIV and STD prevention trials, there was a push to evaluate the outcome using both measures. There are still vast majority of papers that using only self-report. So in this study, we looked only in those who had both the biological outcome and the self-report. If you look in general and you look on randomized controlled trials of behavioral intervention, the vast majority would have only behavioral, only self-report. In the past, there was some indication of the shortcoming of self-report. However, it was not really evaluated in a systematic way. We reported the accuracy, sensitivity, and specificity of the self-report. Again, assuming that the gold standard is the biological outcome. So self-report do not detect the efficacy of behavioral intervention that are captured in the biological test. Both, however, agree when the intervention is efficacious. So if we know that the treatment is going to work, then self-report is going to do pretty well. When the treatment doesn't work, then you are in big problem. Self-report provide with more false positive about the efficacy of an intervention, concluding that intervention work when it actually does not. Self-report vary across HIV prevention intervention. The sensitivity are high, but the specificity in general are very low. If the question about protected sex specifically for type of partner. So as a statistician, we always want the best measurement one can get, and in essence, one would argue biological outcome are better measurements. But if it's not possible, better self-report measures should be considered in order to improve the evaluation of behavioral intervention. So, is there a way to take those self-report questions and redesign the questionnaire, those questionnaires, in order to get a better measure for the phenomenon that we're trying to evaluate? Questionnaires in order to get a better relying on aggregated data, and therefore ecological bias may be misleading the results. So that is all for that, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
I don't think there are two different ways of measuring the same thing. I think the usual language would be to say that a change in behavior is an intermediate outcome on the way to the meaningful, patient meaningful, or clinically meaningful outcome of not acquiring an STD.
Okay.
And there's a lot of literature and thinking about this question of when you should consider intermediate outcomes, when success with respect to an intermediate outcome should be considered as success, because you usually get intermediate outcomes quicker and cheaper than you get these other outcomes. So there's something about the way you framed this, using the language of sensitivity and specificity, which
so the reason that I've done it is in order to reduce the dimension into positive and negative, work or doesn't work, and in that way you can say, you can talk about sensitivity, specificity, and you can reduce the, in a sense, the dimension to very simple structure. But even if you look on those effect sizes, okay, and then you can get more complex. If you look at the literature, people would do HIV. A behavioral HIV studies, and the only thing that they would measure would be self-report attitude towards sex, and that would be the outcome. That's it. Okay, and then they would say my intervention is successful in reducing HIV.
Yeah, but that's exactly the same thing that happens when you give somebody a drug to reduce their high blood pressure.
Yeah.
And the truth is, nobody cares about whether your blood pressure is high, except for the fact that they're trying to prevent heart disease.
Yeah.
So the real outcome is having prevented serious outcomes of heart disease, but the thing that we measure, understanding that it's imperfect, and that it could be totally misleading. We could imagine a drug which brings your blood pressure down, but kills you.
Yeah.
But we could say, we brought your blood pressure down, we have a great drug, we should start using it.
So what's important here is, so what I'm trying to argue is that you have to think about what you measure and how you measure it. And if what you are really interested in is that heart attack, then you need to measure heart attack.
There's all kinds of reasons why people use these surrogate or intermediate Yeah.
But then say that that's what you're measuring and that's what your main outcome is. But don't say my main outcome is heart attack, but I only care about blood pressure.
Well, so the reason that people are allowed to get away with showing that they reduced blood pressure and not worrying about these much longer term, harder to observe effects is because there's a lot of studies which do show that people, not just people who have lower blood pressure, but people whose blood pressure has been lowered by an intervention, do have fewer heart attacks.
And then, but that's exactly the point. So here you have a literature that shows that there is high relationship between the biological, or here it's not, between the intermediate and the final outcome. Well, here there isn't.
We've only got an ecological study. I want to see if people report that they've changed their sexual behavior are less likely to get
There is a lot of work about that, and it's all the HIV experts would say we don't believe it. That's what they do. So if you don't believe it, don't do it. It's probably had some type of impact. What the impact? I don't know. Well, I'm not sure. I still haven't got the results from those investigators, so I'm not sure what they got the paper, and they are holding up on comments for us for some reasons. I don't know. I'm looking very anxiously to see what they think about it. But if you take any paper, HIV paper, in the limitation. Probably 95% of the time that the limitation of the study is that we measure it as self-report. That's the limitation of the study, it always would be there. So we don't really believe what people answer and still we keep asking them.
But even for something as simple as the question, have you had sex? There's no biological, there is biological testing that no one's going to go through it just to get on a survey or something.
Yeah. The question is, can we find questions that would be higher correlated or get better, closer to this biological or to this outcome that you're really interested in and not have all those problems with the...
Creating a good search for doing some validity after the ability study, and there are some of them already like that. So, and next step will be which ones are the ones that really agree, are the ones that are just one question or two questions, or are the ones that are actually using a self-report that has been validated previously. So that could be a next step.
And what is the question, did you have sex within the last month?
Yes, many times.
That's the...
Did you have unprotected sex within the last month?
Yeah. Did you unprotect? So there will be how many unprotected sex you have? How many of those you would have with your study partner? How many of those you have? So it depends on the study how many questions and how deep.
There are people who could design a set of questions which would have some internal validity.
So what I'm saying here is. Let those people come and step forward.
It's very few in this literature.
Yeah. So the guy that one of the guys that we work with, he's doing a lot of adherence work, and he don't believe self-report for adherence at all. And even the cups, the thing, the electronic cup
measures,
even that he is kind of skeptical, and he's doing that together with how they call it? They come to your house on unannounced time and doing blood testing and pill counts, and only then he's partially believing his measurement. So because he can show in his studies that you people said I took all the medication, but you do a blood test and it's not there. So there is but I know that in that area there is much more work that is being done. Okay.